Oh, hello. I am C-3PO Human Cyborg Relations, welcoming you to Star Wars Delusions of Grandeur, presented by the Journey Into podcast. As always, here are your hosts, the honorable and wise Master Marshall Latham, thoroughly decent and fair-minded to biologicals and droids alike, and his sour-tongued and oft-malfunctioning counterpart, Rish Outfield, an untrustworthy and despicable creature even R2 doesn't like. And he likes everyone. I'm always telling him, R2-D2, you're far too amenable to humans and their unpredictable ilk. Why, this one time, a perfect stranger asked him to patch into an Imperial communications network to find out patrol schedules, and before I knew it, the two of us were in the middle of the most dangerous... What? Oh, yes. Please do enjoy the show. Oh my, I'd forgotten how much I hate podcasting. Ooh.
Welcome to the Journey Into podcast. We are proud to present to you this month another episode of The Delusions of Grandeur, where we turn our attention to a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away and discuss the world of Star Wars. My name is Marshall Latham, and I'm happy to be joined by my friend and fellow Star Wars fan, Rish Outfield.
Hey, Marshall.
Hey.
Oh, is this going to be a super long episode, or are we going to do our listeners a favor?
Well, we could torture them or give them reprieve. I don't know which they'd consider worse, us not talking enough about it or talking too much.
I say let the listeners go. So my guess is, my prediction is that this episode is going to be about Solo.
Yes, and it will be about Solo.
You'll forgive me if I don't call it Solo, a Star Wars story, right?
Yeah. At first I thought, oh, that's kind of neat, you know, kind of a neat way to tell everybody that it's Star Wars, but at this point, it's kind of annoying.
Well, yeah, I wonder if it serves the purpose that they put it on there to serve, or if it's unnecessary now. Like 10 years from now, when we're in Jocasta New Jedi Librarian, a Star Wars story, yeah. Will people still need a Star Wars story on there?
I don't know, or there needs to be some other way, a code or something to... Because I can see, like, you know, Rogue One came out the same year as, like, Rogue Nation, right?
Oh, did it really?
I think so. I think it did. Or at least, yeah, I think Rogue Nation came out that summer, and then Rogue One was... So stuff like that, you know, Rogue One doesn't... You don't necessarily know it's a Star Wars movie, but there's got to be a better way to do it than...
Well, we'll see.
I guess Solo, they could have named it Kessel Run or something instead of Solo. But.
Well, I remember when you were a kid and they would have these the toy commercials and they'd be like, the AT-AT Walker from the Star Wars, the Empire Strikes Back collection.
Yeah,
and it's just like a huge mouthful where they would stay. Cloud Car from the Star Wars, the Empire Strikes Back collection from Kenner.
I do remember that.
But, okay, so, Lo, this, I don't feel like this was a long time in coming, but I don't know, it should have been a little longer in coming, I think, but that's neither here nor farther between, or nor a galaxy far, far away.
You mean the release of the movie?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like they would have done a heck of a lot better releasing it in December.
I do too, yeah, I think that's...
And I actually heard somebody say, well, Disney didn't want to step on the toes of Mary Poppins Returns. And I thought, well, that's a really flimsy reason to lose $100 million. But
yeah,
let's not talk about that. Let's talk about the movie. When did you get to see it?
Well, I saw it Friday, so the official opening day.
You saw it opening day, okay.
Yeah, yeah, Friday
night. And was it at all difficult to get into?
It wasn't. I mean, typically the... There's two choices, theaters. I can go to the local one in the town that I live in, or I can drive a half an hour to a bigger town, and they have, you know, a bigger theater with more screens and more frills or whatever. And typically, going to the local one, there's not as many people even on opening night of most shows. So I have a friend that we've talked about going to movie. You know, he's a big Star Wars fan. And so I said, well, why don't our families go together? And so I had bought the tickets earlier in the day, and he was rushing from work to get there. So we got there first to save seats. But the theater wasn't full. It wasn't necessarily empty either, but we probably didn't need to get there as early as we did to get seats that we wanted. But yeah, it's pretty easy to get in. I don't know if that's because of the low box office or because that's just the way the theater is. Everybody either goes to the other town or doesn't go to the shows as much.
Is the one that's a half hour away a nicer theater?
Yeah, it's nicer. The seats are pretty good at the local one. But it's just got more screens and better, a little bit better sound. And in the local theater, some of the screens, you can see like a little tear up in the corner or something like that.
Ah.
You know, that kind of thing. Luckily, we didn't get in that theater, so I didn't have any tears to distract me. How about you? When did you go?
I went on Thursday night. I didn't think I'd be able to get in, but yeah, like everyone in America, I found it emptier than I imagined. And this was the same theater that enabled me to see Force Awakens on opening night by just adding new screens. This theater, after 10 p.m. on Thursday, they just bumped everything that was playing in their other theaters and just put Solo on there every 10 minutes.
Wow.
Until the demand went away. And so we had the option of 10 and 10:10 and 10:20 and 10:30 and ultimately, I think we went to a 10:40 show where we could sit where we wanted. And so that was nice. I don't know if you've ever gone to a movie that's like so full that you don't get to sit with your group. But in that case, I always feel like, well, why didn't I just come alone?
Yeah, you might as well, right?
Our screening was pretty full, but not so full that there was any difficulty in getting in.
Yeah. So as you left the theater, what was your feeling about the movie?
Okay, well, yeah, long before I knew that it was not going to be a hit for Disney, I was just like, dude, this is so much fun. I hope they do this like every other year. They give us a fun Star Wars adventure without angst and without, I mean, not that there wasn't angst, but you know what I mean? It's like Rogue One was depressing. The Last Jedi was kind of miserable. And this one felt like it was just lighter and more of an adventure. There was less writing on it. And I thought, well, that's what they need to do with these standalones, is have movies that are just fun, come up with scenarios and characters that we like, and just toss one out every couple of years. I was really pleased with the film, because we had heard such doom and gloom leading up to it.
Right.
And I was really cynical that in order to make its release date, Memorial Day 2018, that Lucasfilm had just tossed more and more and more money at it until, you know, this ballooned to a $300 million budget. And I was just like, oh, guys, you don't have to do that. What? But then, you know, after I saw the movie, I was just like, oh, cool. They focused on characters as well as special effects in this movie. Fun. And yeah, I'd like to see a movie about Lando, and I'd like to see more about Han. And the way that the movie ended, sorry to jump to the end of the movie, but it felt like they had plans for future stories. Like that not everything had been tied up. There was still what's going to happen on Tatooine, what's going to happen with Kira, and yeah, what's going to happen with the shadowy overlord that we can talk about later. I was like, hey, oh, this didn't feel like a one and done kind of thing. This feels like, oh, they're aspiring to more.
Right, and there's lots of possibilities of ways you could go. Yeah, I felt the same way coming out of the theater. You know, I was talking to my friend that I went with. You know, I said, what'd you think? He says, oh, that was a lot of fun. I said, yeah, a lot of people were worried that there wasn't going to be any good. And he says, people just need to learn how to enjoy things instead of worry so much about this and that and the other. Yeah, I felt the same way. I was like, it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of good moments. It wasn't as heavy as the saga movies, or like you said, Rogue One. And I guess that's a complaint people could have, is that it didn't have a lot of weight to it and it was superfluous or whatever. But Like you said, I think we need that kind of fun movie. I mean, that's what Lucas set out to do in the first place, was just to make a fun space adventure with all these characters. It doesn't have to be so laden with theme. And I mean, that's all good storytelling stuff, but I thought there was a lot of good storytelling, a lot of good twists and turns and character moments. I especially like the stuff with Beckett's crew, you know, when Han first joined, and I thought that was great stuff, you know. And of course that changed as the movie went on, but all the stuff with Kira I liked. There were some high stakes and threats and, you know, things that they had to deal with, and it just didn't have this, the fate of the galaxy hanging over your head.
Yeah, that's a good point. They weren't trying to save a planet or a galaxy in this, and maybe you can just put your feet up a little bit more and have fun. But it also just had a lighter attitude, a little bit more joy, especially with the Han character, which is cool.
Yeah, so did you enjoy Alden Ehrenreich?
Whoa!
As Han Solo.
Wow, that is impressive. Do you have that written down somewhere?
I don't, actually.
Wow, off the top of your head. Yeah, I think I was fine with him. You know, you see him in the opening moments of the film, and maybe it takes you a while to get used to him. But I'd say, you know, 5 minutes into it or whatever, it's just like, this is new Han Solo, in the same way that when there's a new Bond, maybe you have to make a mental adjustment, but after a few minutes, hopefully, you're not constantly comparing him to the last one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that would be death to say, well, Austin Earing writes isn't Harrison Ford. Well, no, he can't be. But there were certainly moments when he tried, when you could feel him channeling him. And I appreciated that.
Yeah, you know, and I thought he brought his own charm to it, too. He kind of had his own thing going on as well. It did take me a bit to get into it, as far as him as a character. Have you seen it more than once?
I did. I took my nephews to see it yesterday.
Oh, okay. And well, that's good.
So the second time, yeah, I didn't even have to have that little mental adjustment, because I'd already seen it, and yeah, I just knew.
Yeah, I actually went to see it this afternoon because, you know, I've heard a lot of people talking about the movie, and there's people that felt like me that it was just a fun ride and a fun movie, and other people that had issues with it or thought it was mediocre and quality wasn't as good. And then, of course, with the really bad, or not bad, but disappointing, low-performing for a Star Wars movie box office numbers, you know, I just started thinking, did I miss something? Is it kind of bad? Am I just in a Phantom Menace phase of the Solo movie kind of thing? So I said, I got to go see it tonight before I talk to Rish, just to check myself and see. Plus, I wanted to see it again and catch stuff I hadn't seen before. And yeah, as I watched it today, I was like, man, this is really good. I really like it. These characters are good. And a lot of the things that people were complaining about, I guess, didn't bother me as much. So I'm more resolved now that it was a good movie and I liked it. So,
And what did you think of Elton Reist?
I thought Alden Ehrenreich did a good job. I think he made it his own. And it's kind of funny. A lot of times, and he kind of had a Leo vibe to him.
DiCaprio.
Yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio. He had some similar things I noticed there. But not in a bad way. You know, he's his own character and everything. But yeah, I noticed some similarities there. And you do notice times when, you know, he says things in a similar way that Harrison Ford might have. But yeah, I thought it was good. I liked him.
Who?
Alden Ehrenreich.
That's so impressive. Seriously, I talked with my cousin afterward, and I was like, what's the name of the guy? And he's like, oh, Aaron Alden Kirk. I was like, no, I don't think that's right. And he's like, it's not just me.
No, yeah.
You have it just right at the tip of your tongue. I like that.
Yeah, I've heard several people on the online still struggle with the name. I don't know why. Yeah, I caught on to it. Now, to try to pronounce the actor that plays Chewbacca, that's a different story.
No. Do we have to? Can we just call him New Chewbacca?
We can just call him the New Chewbacca, yeah. I did see an interview with him, and he explained to the interviewer how to pronounce his name, but I didn't catch it. I didn't commit that to memory, so...
To me, the new Chewbacca is just flawlessly Chewbacca. And I don't know if that was a huge accomplishment, if they worked really hard so he just felt like Chewie. Well, but like, new Yoda in Phantom Menace should have been even easier because it was still Frank Oz and all that. I'm not sure why sometimes these things don't... I don't know how vital... Is the person inside the costume?
I think it's pretty important, especially for somebody like Chewie. And it was good that with Force Awakens that the new Chewbacca was able to spend time with Peter Mayhew and ask him questions and get some of the mannerisms and watch him as Chewbacca to try to get some kind of a idea of the tricks or the mannerisms that he has. Yeah, that interview was pretty interesting, too, to hear of his experience. You know, they were just looking for tall guys kind of thing. Similar to Peter Mayhew, I think. You know, they were just looking for somebody that had some acting background, but they were mainly looking for the height.
I would enjoy sitting down with this guy and asking if there's a certain way that you have to walk, if there's something you do with your neck and all that stuff to imitate the way that we have seen Chewbacca, or if just when you're in the suit, you know, it's like Iron Man or something like that. It doesn't matter if it's a stuntman or Robert Downey Jr. or whatever. It's just like, when you look like Iron Man, you're Iron Man. And I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I've never compared, you know, like, does it matter if it's a War Machine? Is it different other than the color and the whatever of the armor? You know, a lot of the times that I said, wow, that's Chewbacca right there, isn't when he's necessarily doing a lot, but sometimes when he's just standing there next to Han and they're talking to somebody else or something's going on and he's just kind of standing there. It's a certain kind of stance. I don't know how to explain it, but I felt he did a good job too.
So just, yeah, I guess if we're just talking about the characters, can we talk about Kira for a moment?
Yeah.
So the end of the movie... I don't know, obviously spoilers, but at the end of the movie, she abandons Han and Chewie on that planet. She takes the yacht and the Crimson Dawn organization, basically, and just leaves.
Right.
And I was going to use the B word. I was going to say she betrayed Han, but when I mentioned that to my cousin, he's like, no, I don't think she ever betrayed Han. But when I took my nephew to it, when we saw the yacht... You know what I'm talking about, right? The giant ship.
Yep, the giant ship.
Start to turn and go away. He leaned over and he said, is she bad? And I said, well, yeah, she's sort of making her choice to leave him there. And then he said, was she bad the whole time? And that to me was an interesting question.
Yeah.
Not one where you can just say yes or no to the boy. I think there's some nuance there. And knowing that she was going to kill her boss and take his place at the end of the movie, the second time that I watched it, I watched for clues.
Mm-hmm.
And you may disagree, but there were no clues that there was anything bad about Kira. I felt like she was in over her head. She was tied to something that she could never get away from. She had made moral compromises and there was no way out for her. And whenever we saw this mystery in her eyes or this something that Han wasn't seeing, to me, it was always regret. To me, it was always like, darn, I wish that I could be like I was, or I could be like he is, or I wish I could be the woman that he thinks that I am. But I never felt like she was an evil character or a corrupted character on the inside. I just felt like she was somebody that no longer had any choices. But... my cousin said, well, but Beckett said Kira killed Voss, right?
Yeah.
She killed him, didn't she? He had predicted that this was going to happen, as though maybe this was always in the back of her mind of, someday I'm going to see an opening and I'm going to take it and I'm going to kill this guy and I'm going to become the big shot and all that. And anyhow, I wondered what you thought about her character, her motivations, and what you would say to a 10-year-old who said, was Kira bad the whole time?
Well, I think, especially watching it the second time, they were trying to portray that there was more to her than what she was showing. And there was a couple lines where, like when they were going to meet Voss, you know, they had the plan or whatever, and they were going up to meet with him at the end. You know, he says, oh, we're going to win. And she goes, it's not like that. You know, you need to, it's just to survive as long as you can.
It's not about winning. The point of this game is to stay in as long as you can, right?
Yeah. And then he says, well, you don't know everything. And she says, you're right, but I know a little bit more than you, kind of thing.
That's when they're in the elevator, right?
Yeah, in the elevator.
Okay.
So that's maybe one point where you could tell that there was more to her character than what she was letting on. But in saying that, I think she genuinely cared for Han and loved Han and wanted to be with Han. But I think she also knew that she had chosen a different life and that it wasn't going to happen, you know, that she would be with Crimson Dawn. I don't know if she was plotting the whole time to take over, but she was probably always looking for an opportunity. I mean, obviously, Beckett had dealings with Voss and with Kira before, but I don't know how much he would know of her character or her intentions, you know, if he read her as somebody that would betray them or choose Crimson Dawn over them. But I would say she didn't betray Han. She just abandoned him. She left him. Whether she's bad, was she bad the whole time? I think her decision was made the whole time that she was part of Crimson Dawn and always would be. But she still cared for Han.
Okay, well, now I found that interesting. The thought of how do I answer the boy and really what was her deal?
Yeah.
Because it seems to me that she could have stolen all those jewels and taken off and perhaps lived a life of adventure, but maybe she would have always been looking over her shoulder.
Yeah, Crimson Dawn would have always been after her. They would have assumed that she's the one that killed Voss. And
But
she did protect Han. You know, she didn't mention him at all.
That's true.
When she was reporting. So she blamed it all on Beckett.
But she goes for a confab with Darth Maul at the end.
No, just Maul.
Yeah. What's the story with that? Is did he give up his title when he joined Star Wars Rebels?
I guess he doesn't consider himself a Sith anymore, so he got rid of the Darth title, I guess.
Okay. But yes, just the movie ends, and there is more to tell with her.
Yeah.
At one point, Voss gives this speech that's a little bit like Grand Leader Snoke. What's his name? Supreme Chancellor Snoke. I know it's something
Snoke. Supreme Leader Snoke.
Saying, you know, this boy is so effed up, young Rey. You don't know what he's done. And all that. And it's just like, okay. And Han doesn't believe it, and Rey doesn't believe it. And it's just, you know, I guess it all goes back to the Emperor saying, now you must know that, you know, your father can never return from the dark side. Can you imagine being the PA that has to clean up the spittle after every take of Ian McDiarmid as the Emperor?
Yeah, especially in The Return of the Jedi.
Anyhow, they think there is more to be revealed with that character and there are wheels turning in her head, and we don't really know where they are going.
Yeah.
But it could be that she had been corrupted to the point where she's like, Han is my past, and I can never be that girl on Corellia that was innocent, and there's no point in even trying to go back to that life. I don't know. Han was just so into her. And I got the impression that she's like, well, this is nice to have somebody look at me this way, but it can never work. I always have to keep him at arm's length.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing is she could just figure that, I guess she wouldn't think she owes Han anything, but she might think that the only way to protect Han is to go deeper into the Crimson Dawn kind of thing.
Well, see, if I were writing a sequel, I would definitely have both her organization and whatever organization Han is working for go after the same thing. Just like
we
saw with, I wish I could name these characters, Enfys Nest, something like that.
Oh, yeah, Enfys Nest, or Enfys, yeah.
Yeah, you can't do it either.
I can't do that one either, yeah. Infant Nest? I don't know.
And just have, you know, people that answer to her. Also, it would be a really fun reveal for Han to realize that Kira is the head of Crimson Dawn, or, you know, the head of this organization. And, you know, it's like, oh, you don't know this new leader. You don't cross the new leader of Crimson Dawn. And then he realizes that this is the same girl. I think there's drama there. And I think the idea of that there's a certain line Han won't cross, even though he's a mercenary, even though he's a smuggler. But she'll cross that line easily, and she knows that he won't cross that.
Yeah.
And so she uses it to beat him, uses it to undercut him in a sequel. I mean, again, I'm not writing these things. Maybe no one is going to be writing this thing, but I feel there is more story to tell. But yeah, sorry, let me just bring up this one other thing, and then I will let you talk. Maul. The shadowy figure is revealed to be Darth Maul from Phantom Menace.
Yes.
Or from the Clone Wars cartoon and Rebels cartoon, if you're a big fan. My cousin also said that Darth Maul came back in the comics, so I guess there's another outlet there.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact that you and I saw an episode of Rebels wherein he finally confronts Obi-Wan Kenobi and is killed, definitively killed, led me to believe, well, why is this cameo here? If he's just going to die in a few months or a couple of years, depending on when Solo takes place, why have Maul in this sequence? And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, they have to have a plan for him. They have to have said, okay, this is why we're going to have Maul. Not just Ray Park is available and some of the audience would get a thrill from seeing him, right?
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed seeing him there. I thought it was an interesting choice, like you're saying. But I also think it's been a huge distraction from the movie. Because that's what everybody's talking about is Darth Maul. They're not talking about Han Solo so much. They're all talking about Darth Maul. And the people that haven't kept up with the animated series or comic books or whatever, you know, they're just, what? Darth Maul?
Confused. Yeah, Big was telling me of a coworker that said, well, I don't get it. Is Han supposed to be like 50 when we see him in Star Wars, in A New Hope?
Yeah.
Because Darth Maul was killed like when Anakin was a little boy.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh gosh, how many people were like that? And I feel bad for them because it's a distraction you don't need at the end of the movie.
And you shouldn't, if you're a fan of the movies, you shouldn't be expected to have seen all the cartoons and read all the books. I mean, that's a complaint we've had about, you know, some of the other movies. That shouldn't be required in order to enjoy and understand the movie itself. But maybe they figured they had to bridge that gap at some point where they had related material between the movies and the all of the canon stuff. You know, they got the TV series showing up now. Eventually some of that might cross over into the movies too. Who knows? But I did read an interesting article today where Ron Howard said that it was actually his choice to use Darth Maul. That when he came onto the project, they just had the big boss. You know, he was just set up as a boss of Crimson Dawn, but they didn't really have the identity of who it was nailed down. And they had several thoughts and several possibilities, and Maul was one of those. As soon as Ron Howard saw that and started to learn about Maul and where he's been in the other in the canon, he pushed for that. He said, no, it has to be him, and we have to do it that way. And so he really went to bat for making that Maul, which I thought was interesting, that they didn't even have that nailed down in the script. Even at the stage where he came on to the movie, let alone and all the stuff that had happened before.
Okay, well, see, that's interesting, and it's telling, though. It just doesn't... I'm not saying that it ruins the movie, although if somebody didn't know that Maul is alive, I can see that ruining the movie for them.
Yeah.
Because suddenly they start doing math. And dude, there's nothing worse than math. Did you see A Beautiful Mind? So I've been thinking about, like, who else could it have been? I mean, do you have any suggestions? Because when they didn't say his name, I just assumed it was going to be Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah.
And my cousin said, no, I never thought it was going to be Jabba the Hutt. And I thought, okay. And when we saw that it was a cloaked person, well, I was just like, oh, Emperor Palpatine. Interesting. But I mean, it could have been Vader. It could have been, what was the bad guy in Rogue One's name? Director Krennic? It could have been Grand Admiral Thrawn. I think that would have been really neat.
That would have been cool.
Could have been one of the bounty hunters we know. It could have been fan service king, Boba Fett. And I don't know that it would have caused the head scratching that I have been going through and with the other people I've talked to. I'm not sure why it is Darth Maul. And if they have plans for him, then that's fine. That's cool. I'm just curious what they would be.
Yeah, you know, they did announce just before Solo came out that they were going to do a Boba Fett movie that the director of Logan.
James Mangold.
Yes, James Mangold was going to be the director for a new Boba Fett movie. And so I don't know if some of this with Kira and Maul is going to tie into that at some point.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then I give them the benefit of the doubt. But I much rather would have seen it be Zuckuss or Forlom or, gosh, help me out.
Dengar.
They mentioned Ara Singh in this movie.
Right.
And to me, she is just an utterly wasted character. But somebody that we've seen before who didn't get killed on screen, yeah, that shows up later. Even if it were, oh, let's reuse that awful CG Tarkin. I don't know why it was.
Or it could have been Cad Bane.
Cad Bane is the cowboy bounty hunter alien, the Duros.
Right, from Clone Wars.
I think that would have worked better. Now, it wouldn't have the same audience recognition as Maul.
Sure.
But for the few people that know who he is, they would get a thrill out of that. But you also wouldn't have the problem of a potential contradiction in the audience's mind. Plus, like the cameo of Thanos at the end of Avengers. I took my nephew to see that, and we sat through the end credits. And then it says, you know, to do war with them would be to
tempt fate,
flirt with death. And then he stands up and you see the smile. And my nephew said, Thanos! And the dude in the aisle ahead of us turned around and said, who? But it doesn't matter if you don't know who Thanos is, because they're setting the stage for somebody who's going to come later.
Yeah, yep.
And if that's the case of this cameo, you know, if it were Cad Bane, it wouldn't matter if the people don't recognize him, as long as they know, oh, this is somebody who's important for later.
Right, and it would have served. Learning about who Cad Bane was could have been drawn up interest in, oh, Cad Bane, who's he? Oh, he's from the Clone Wars, and he did this and this and this. Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, hey, what was the name of the green-skinned crime boss in, like, Shadows of the Empire and stuff like that?
Oh, right. Oh, wow, that's going back.
You know, but just somebody like that who doesn't have an expiration date in the past and in the future, like Darth Maul, because I think he's probably the worst possible choice, because we know that Obi-Wan kills him in Rebels, and if you don't know that Obi-Wan kills him in Rebels, then you think Obi-Wan killed him in 1999.
Yeah, it's my initial reaction to it was just kind of a knowing grin, or, oh, that's kind of cool, that's kind of neat. But the more I thought about it, and of course hearing a lot of the conversations on the internet and stuff, it's all about Maul. It's
well, and are people saying what I'm saying? Or are there people that are just like, oh, that was great to see Darth Maul again. That brings me back to where I was as a little kid.
No, it's kind of just a meh kind of thing. It's like, oh, Darth Maul. They wanted to bring Darth Maul in there. And then they go in to explain, oh, well, Darth Maul, see, he didn't really die. And he came back with spider legs, and then he got normal legs. And He took over Black Sun and got the dark saber and all this stuff, you know. It's like, okay.
Spider legs and all that stuff. Yeah, see, you're telling me things that I didn't know and didn't need to know. Dude, maybe it would have been better if it was a guy we had never seen before. But we know this is her boss and that this guy is going to be significant.
Right.
And they could have done any design they want. They could even have cast like somebody significant where we'd be like, oh my gosh, so-and-so in that part. That's really cool. I mean, I don't know who.
Yeah.
But somebody that loves Star Wars and has not yet been in a Star Wars movie. Somebody like, I mean, Tom Hardy had his scene in Last Jedi cut out. But I, you know, somebody like that would be happy to come back and just be a hologram. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking this. But I just, the other thing that bothered Big is that it's like, oh, a prequels character.
Yeah, right.
He had walled up the prequels in the back of his mind and walked away. They're down there with the cask of Amontillado. and I'll never, ever need to go back there.
But he is the coolest prequels character.
Yes, I'm sorry. That's true. I should have given him his due. Of all the prequels characters, he is the one that is remembered the most fondly today. Or has weathered the storm or whatever you want to call it. He was a really well-designed character in 1999, and he remains just visually striking to look at.
Now, here's a what if. What if it was Jar Jar?
I just cannot see that working. I you're probably joking, right?
I am joking. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, okay, you know, it's a young, non-deformed Snoke.
No, now that could have been interesting. Just have Andy Serkis as himself show up.
No, I don't think that guy is patterned on Serkis at all.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice. But
yeah, and let's say that the best possible situation happens and that people go to see Solo all through the summer and it does fine. And 2 or 3 years from now, they do make a sequel to it. I hope that they give this character something to do, that it wasn't just a throwaway cameo, but they have plans for Maul. And I would really enjoy seeing live action interpretations of some of those characters from Rebels.
Yeah.
It would be neat to see like Charlize Theron as Hera or something like that. Just to see what that would look like.
Yeah.
And you could tie it into wherever it happens to be on the timeline as far as Rebels goes, you know, so that the people that know that he is killed in that episode in season 4 or whenever it is, say, oh well, this doesn't contradict that. They're still aware that he's looking for Kenobi and okay, well, there's another thing. What if it's a tie-in to the potential Kenobi movie?
Hmm.
Would it be crazy? Would it be stupid to bring back Maul in a Obi-Wan Kenobi solo film?
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't like that because they did interact in Clone Wars, and they do interact, you know, there's the scene in Rebels where he fights Obi-Wan and gets killed for the final time. You know, and the whole thing at Rebels is he's trying to figure out where Obi-Wan is, and he's on Tatooine, so Obi-Wan would have to leave Tatooine in order to interact with him to make that work. And I still kind of have a weird taste in my mouth on an Obi-Wan movie. I mean, I like Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan, and since he's even older now, you know, that would make sense as for the character, but just for the plot, I don't know what they would do to make that compelling. I wouldn't like to see Maul with him in that movie.
Okay.
That's just me.
I'm just spitballing. I hope they have given this even more thought than I have.
Yeah, I hope they just weren't going for the shock value. Oh, wouldn't it be cool if we just threw Darth Maul in there? I guess I feel happy for Ray Park that he gets to reprise his role in there.
One more time. What's the name of the guy that plays Han Solo?
Alden Ehrenreich.
Wow, see, that's awesome. You've probably said it 3 or 4 times in this episode, and if you had say, Rish, what's the name of the guy who plays... In fact, maybe you should do that at some point, just out of nowhere, and see if I can do it.
All right. I'll try to catch you up. Well, one of the things I thought might be fun, and I guess we'll see if it is or not, but several months ago we did a episode where we had predictions for the Solo movie, And I thought,
unfortunately, that episode has been lost. There's no way of knowing what we had said. Huh. Kind of a relief, actually, because what if this wasn't a fun bit?
No, but I went through it and I took out snippets of our predictions. I thought maybe we could go through those and talk about them if you think that'd be a good exercise.
Well, if it isn't... Oh, hey, we've run out of time, folks. Thanks for listening. All right, now we're covered.
Okay, so I'll try to make this as short as possible. I think I'm first up here.
I think we'll see a character from Rogue One show up. Is it either a cameo or a guest spot on Han Solo? It could even be an adolescent Boar Gullet.
Your obsession with Boar Gullet is the worst thing about you, sir. Your penchant for shoplifting is nothing to your admiration for Boar Gullet.
That is why you fail.
No Boar Gullet that I could see. I guess, you know, we've already talked about Darth Maul. That's not a Rogue One cameo, but it is a prequels cameo. But I didn't see Boar Gullet or anybody else from Rogue One in there.
Well, at the end, one of Elliot Ness's men is Edrio Two Tubes from Rogue One. He's one of the rebels that works for Forrest Whitaker's character.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, I mean, if you didn't notice him, then maybe I can't give you credit for it, but I noticed him.
So what scene would he have shown up in?
Well, she has people that work for her, and they all wear these Bushman mask things, and then at the end of the movie, okay. They all take those off, and one of them is a Rodian with orange skin, one of them is Warwick Davis, and then one of them is Edrio Two Tubes from Rogue One.
Well, there you go.
Should that not count? Since right now you are looking up Edrio Two Tubes to see who that is.
Yeah, so I think that counts. It wasn't a main character, but it was a character.
No, it's pretty obscure.
All right, so here's one of your predictions here.
Anyway, my first prediction is that we see Han make the Kessel Run in under 13 parsecs. That's how he makes a name for himself.
Ah. So you called that one.
Wow, that's weird. Because in Star Wars, he actually says less than 12 parsecs. But in this movie, it sounds like it was more than 12 parsecs. It's 12 if you round down. So I was doubly right.
You were. You know, I guess we might have assumed that, but that was a good prediction there. What did you think of the Kessel Run? Was it what you were expecting?
You know, I think I had heard explanations for what the Kessel Run was throughout my life, and it was not unlike what we saw.
Oh, okay. I guess I didn't have an idea of what it would be. I was thinking it was more of a... I figured it was, you know, hard to navigate, and you had to go different places like they did, but I wasn't... I guess I didn't know about the maelstrom that covered Kessel.
Well, you know, the scene with the TIE fighters chasing the Falcon and them playing the music from Empire and stuff was probably my favorite scene in the movie.
Yeah, that was cool.
And so... I have really good feelings for the Kessel Run sequence.
No, that was great, especially today as I watched it for the second time, and I knew it was coming, but I was able to appreciate the smaller moments in that. And yeah, from when the Star Destroyer shows up and until they get the last TIE fighter there, and the music, you know, like you said, it's the asteroid field scene and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of jokes in there too that were pretty hilarious.
That was a lot of fun, and we need that stuff. I mean, that's what that sequence in Star Wars, the Here They Come sequence, was. I mean, it was filled with that stuff.
Yeah.
Great shot, kid. Don't get cocky. Help, help. I think I'm melting. I don't know. I guess maybe it is difficult to come up with a tone where these characters' lives are in danger, but it's fun to watch them make their escape, because you don't want it to be too oppressive where it's, holy cow, dude, how are they going to make it out of this? Oh, dude, yeah. No kind of thing.
You know he's going to survive, but how the heck is he going to do that?
Right, but you can also take it too far. I remember seeing The Mummy Returns, and it had a number of action sequences where I never for a moment felt like the characters were in any danger. And I sort of just mentally checked out in that scene. And so maybe it is a balancing act. Maybe it's more difficult than it looks to pull off something like that.
I guess one of the most effective moments in that is, you know, when he injects the fuel directly into the engine, and it spurts for a second, and then everything stalls out, and they're just all going toward the gravity well. And you're just like, what's going to happen on this? And then, boom, it kicks in, and they get out. I thought that was pretty effective. All right, let's go on to the next one here.
Well, my number two kind of goes along with your number one, where I just say, we see the spice mines of Kessel.
Okay, so we saw that. We saw the spice mines.
Right, and Lando says, mining colonies are the worst. Something like that. We didn't really talk about Lando, but he was definitely a high point of the film for me.
He was.
Donald Glover seemed to be having so much fun with that character. And maybe Billy Dee had a ton of fun with Lando in Empire. It's just the Empire was more serious and more oppressive. And from the moment we see Lando, he's in the Empire's clutches or back pocket, depending on how you look at it. But it's just like, wow, the fact that he flirted with everybody, you know, he just, the clothes, and oh my goodness, the outfit he's got on in the final scene, I never want them to make an action figure of that. That thing was awesome.
That was terrible, his costume, yeah.
It was like a little kid's pajamas in the 1950s with a cape.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, we can talk more about Lando maybe after we finish these up here. Okay.
My number two is Han starts out pretty generous and trusting and is betrayed, teaching him that he can only count on himself and that there's no profit in being a hero.
You kind of go on for a little bit after that, but...
I'll bet I do. That could be on my headstone. Yeah, I feel like that is a lesson that they were trying to teach him in this movie, but I'm not sure that he completely got it. It might take another Han Solo movie for him to become jaded enough to say there's no profit in helping other people.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the movie, he does the right thing, and he basically gives up his treasure for, you know, the nascent rebels. And Kira has that line where he's the good guy. And he puts up a brave front, and I'm not the good guy.
I'm an outlaw. Yeah, I think it was somebody else that had seen that in the trailer, but they don't reveal what she says. She just says, I know you better than anybody else, and I know who you really are. And they were hoping that she wouldn't call him a hero.
Ah, interesting. See, I've never seen that trailer. Huh. Yeah, he's definitely... In fact, the character he's most like in this movie is Farm Boy Luke Skywalker.
That's interesting,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how many years we've got between this and A New Hope, but yeah, I guess he does a lot of changing before he becomes...
Yeah, I heard 10 years before first movie.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's 10 years from when he was in Corellia or 10 years... Because it 3 years later where we find him on Mimban?
Right.
In the mud? If that 3 years...
Yeah, let's err on the side of caution and say that there's still another 10 years before we see him in Mos Eisley.
Yeah.
When this movie ends. And you can have a lot of adventure, a lot of things going south, and a lot of people stabbing you in the back that gets you to be that guy that says, I ain't in it for your revolution, mind you. I expect to be well paid.
Yeah, we could see how jaded he becomes. We'll see if they do another sequel.
But what do you think of that prediction? Did it come true?
I think it partially came true.
Because what is it I say at the beginning? He starts out...
He's very generous and trusting, I think, is what you said there.
Yeah, that's a really good description of young Han Solo in this movie. He's one of those people that sees the best in everybody that he meets. And I feel like that's what farm boy Luke Skywalker was at the beginning.
Yeah.
And yeah, poor Luke found out the hard way that not everybody is like that. But I feel like Han's life has to be even worse, to the point where it turns him into somebody that maybe he doesn't like all the time. Maybe he's made choices where it's just like, I shouldn't have done that. And then he puts up a brave face and he's like, but I'm who I am. And that I wouldn't be here if I hadn't done that. You know, if he lies to himself about who he is.
Yeah.
I think there's room in Han Solo, the Han Solo that you and I love and that Renee loves, for you're the good guy.
Well, you know, but he did shoot first, right? He did kill Tobias Beckett.
I was happy that he did.
Oh, me too.
And
me
I
too.
Think the people that have been saying Han shot first for 21 years were probably happy to see that. I felt like it was a nod to that. I liked Beckett a lot, by the way. Me too. I don't know if it was Woody Harrelson's charm or the way that he was written or the way that he was played, but he just was a affable, likable character.
He is perfect for that role, I think.
He does betray Han, but it's a reluctant betrayal.
Yeah, it's a matter of survival for him.
It's a little bit like that guy at the beginning of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yeah.
That says, you lost today, kid, but that doesn't mean you have to like it.
Well, yeah, and then I like, you know, after he shoots him, you know, he goes and is there, you know, talking to him before he dies, and Beckett still, you could tell he cares for Han still, even though he was out for his own self. And he would have shot him, you know, like he said, but he still had care for him and stuff. So, yeah, it was all good. I liked all that stuff. Okay, here's the next prediction.
My number three prediction is that Jabba the Hutt will definitely be referenced in the movie, but probably not seen.
Wow. How did you nail that so well?
I don't know. I think I was thinking that it would just be too on the nose if Jabba the Hutt was...
Before we went to the movie, my cousin said, what are you most looking forward to? And instead of saying, well, I want to hear John Williams' new song that he wrote for this movie, which I should have said, I said, I want to see how they do Jabba the Hutt.
Well, you mentioned that here in your next prediction, which goes along, so I'll play that one here.
My number four is Han gets his first smuggling job and or first works for Jabba. I'm not sure how their relationship would start out. Maybe Jabba needs a good smuggler more than he needs to appear threatening and dangerous. Jabba could, in a franchise without an emperor or Vader, be the big scary bad guy that everybody on every world is afraid of.
Instead, it's Darth Maul.
Wow, I do go on and on.
But yeah, no Jabba.
Like I said, I did think that shadowy figure was going to turn out to be Jabba the Hutt, that, you know, that it would be him on a hologram at the end. But the fact that we don't see Jabba leaves me something to look forward to.
Yeah.
In this world where this movie gets a sequel, how will they pull Jabba off? What will his personality be like? What will his relationship to Han be? Yeah, I want him to do a sequel just to find out what group Han is being put together on Tatooine. Like, what kind of interesting characters are, you know, going to be paired up, matched up in this thing? And there's the sky's the limit of, like, whether there's a girl that can be a new love interest that's on the team, or whether there's somebody that's just like Han but kind of nastier. And you know, they will immediately be at loggerheads. And whether there will be other characters, I mean, they could easily have Greedo be part of that team and have there be an animosity between them from the very beginning. Although it might be more fun if Greedo is painted as like a very charming, happy-go-lucky guy that likes Han. He's like, oh, I like you, Solo. And he's like, yeah, I like you too, Greedo. And he rolls his eyes. Just something like that would be really fun. I love that idea of I'm putting a group together and it's a bunch of disparate individuals that have to work toward a common goal.
Or they're in a competition kind of thing where, hey, whoever
does this for me gets the next big job or something like that.
That would be very fun to have like a great race kind of thing. That might be the way to go for a sequel. Is it doesn't have to be the main plot, but to have a thing where there's like six different groups looking for the same thing, that would be a blast.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Okay, let's see what we got next here. I think we only have a couple more.
You know, it could be just at the end of the movie, Han and Chewie starting out on their own, somebody gives them a tip. Hey, this Jabba the Hutt is looking for some smugglers. You know, Han just kind of looks at Chewie and says, well, we can give that a shot or something like that.
And that's how you end the movie, is knowing.
And that's how you end the movie.
You know where it's going.
Yeah.
Okay, that is dead on, dude.
Yeah.
Well done.
Maybe I looked into the future there. My number four is not too exciting, but I picture the opening scene of the movie being at a Sobek table. Han's gambling. And I don't know whether it would be with Lando or just kind of him in a bar playing Sobek with somebody. Well, see there, I didn't do very well with that prediction. There was Sobek in there, of course, but not the opening scene. Did you like that part of it, the gambling scenes?
Yeah, I liked that there was a montage of it, of, you know, Han winning and Lando winning, you know, kind of thing. And just Kira is watching and he like gets to look over and just be the smooth guy that that he's pretending to be for a minute. That's really cool.
Well, and just all the different characters at the table are pretty cool. And some of them are like, you know, patting him on the back and, oh, good job, good play, that kind of thing. Then other characters are getting mad and leaving the table, and that's good stuff. One of my favorite modern westerns is Maverick.
Yes, so. Maverick's great, dude.
So yeah, there was definitely some of that in there.
Well, maybe the sequel can start that way.
Maybe the sequel could start out with Sobek, yeah. All right, here we go.
My next prediction is another one of those just throwaway ones. Han tells somebody he loves her, him, it, and they say, I know. The prequels loved ruining classic lines this way.
Luckily, we didn't have that scene.
Well, but we almost did.
We did. Okay, I was going to see if you caught that. I was going to bring that up.
I believe Lando says, I hate you.
Yeah.
And Han says, I know.
Yeah, I caught that today when I was watching. I was like, oh, hey, there is a play on that. I really like Lando in that scene where you could tell how angry he is. And then Han says, never? And then he just kind of raises his hand like, don't even start with me.
Oh, right, because he says, I never want to see you again.
Right.
Oh, wow, they thrashed the Falcon in that movie.
Oh, man, yeah.
And it was you. Maybe it wasn't you, but somebody had mentioned that there were complaints about the redesign of the Falcon when that was first shown and all that stuff. But I thought it looked beautiful. I loved that it was brand new and like in pristine condition.
And had the little blue accents on it and stuff.
And when Han comes in and his eyes go all big and it's just like, wow. That really spoke to me. I think that was the right way to go. That he fell in, it was love at first sight with that thing.
Yeah. You know, and maybe nobody knew until they put it in the movie, but I didn't realize that you could have the escape pod in the front of that ship, you know, to make it more of a point. But I thought that was cool looking too. It made it unique for this movie rather than the other movies where we've known the Falcon. Oh, I think we're down to the last prediction here.
So my last prediction here is kind of just a wish. You know, it could just be a throwaway line or, you know, them talking about something, but my prediction is that Star's End will be one of the locales in the movie.
Yeah, I guess Mimbon was my the only thing I can grab on there from the splinter of the mind's eye.
So that mud planet where he meets Chewie is the planet where Vader is looking for the Kyber crystal?
Yep. I thought it was more of a jungly planet in the book.
Well, yeah.
But maybe they changed it so it didn't look like Dagobah or something. So I guess on that note, since we're talking about Mimbon, what did you think of Han and Chewie's first meeting? Did that live up to your expectations of what that would be?
No, I was surprised by that just because I had in my mind the idea of the Wookiees being enslaved and Han rescuing Chewie and sort of, you know, resigning his commission or jumping ship from the Imperial Navy. That's what we had heard.
Right.
For yeah. years and years. And so I had an image in my mind. And in fact, when they said, you know, feed him to the creature or whatever, and they tossed him down there, I was just like, oh, wow, this is going to be cool. What kind of monster are they going to... And it wasn't until the chain started to move that I was like, oh, I know what the creature is going to be. That's great. And I wished that I hadn't caught on another like 10 seconds.
Right.
So, yeah, I like the way they did it, but it wasn't how I expected that they would do it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that scene with them pretending to fight and all, and Han speaking Wookiee was really delightful, too. So.
It was. It was fun. I heard some people complaining about, oh, he shouldn't have actually spoken Wookiee. He should have just said, I can understand you. But I thought that was fun. I thought that was really cool. That
yeah, I loved the broken Wookiee, the subtitles, things like that, when what you're saying is not exactly correct in that language.
Right.
Because you get that so much in Earth languages. And there's that scene in The Incredible Hulk where he's speaking Portuguese and the subtitles say, don't make me hungry. You wouldn't like me when I'm hungry.
Yeah, that was great. Kind of felt the same way. I wasn't expecting them to meet that way. I would have more expected, you know, Chewie to be in the spice mines of Kessel or whatever. But I was thinking about, you know, we always talk about this life debt that Chewie owes, and thinking about how it was done in this movie, you know, they never said anything about a life debt, or Han really didn't save his life other than he did get him out of the pit. But then I was thinking about it today, and I was like, in the movies, do they ever say anything about the life debt, or is that just from...
The life debt gets bumped to Phantom Menace. You know, that's the first time we ever hear of the life debt in the actual movies, and that's Jar Jar. Related.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think they ever said anything about that except for in the comics or the books.
Yeah.
And you, it could still come too if you want. If people complain about that and it's like, where's the life debt? Han and Chewie have a lot more adventures to come.
Right.
You know, it's weird. My cousin was telling me he was really afraid that they were going to acknowledge Mala and Lumpy and Itchy in this movie in some way. And I laughed when he said that because I was like, they would never. And then I was actually disappointed that they didn't.
Well, yeah, what if those Wookiees that he saved were relatives or something, you know? Maybe not Lumpy and Mala and all that.
I know that the holiday special is loathed and, and you know, it's a hiss and a byword, as they say.
Yeah.
But I kind of think it would be really neat to acknowledge that in some way. And again, yes, there are more adventures Han and Chewie can have in the future. But just to see Chewie's kid or Chewie's wife or whatever in a scene, I think would be really fun. Well, maybe it would only be fun for me. And that's really selfish. But, you know, I started out generous and trusting. And I just got betrayed too many times. And now, yeah, I only want what I want. And that is an appearance of Bosk in this movie. Oh my gosh, I lit up when they mentioned Bosk.
I was going to say, he was there in spirit anyway. Yeah, see, I think he should show up in the sequel too.
Oh, absolutely. Either he is one of the guys that Jabba tasks with getting this thing. You know, he's a competitor with Han. Or he's one of the guys on Han's team that they just don't get along. That, you know, it's just like, and he's like, well, I'm going to pretend what you just said was real complimentary. And the droid says, it was not. I'm like, thank you.
One of the other complaints I heard, and I guess I can see where they're coming from.
I think I know where you're going.
Was how he got his name.
Oh, no, I loved that.
Yeah, a lot of people are just, oh, that was, they rolled their eyes and felt that was so groan-worthy that they would put that scene in there. Yeah. Huh. They thought he should have just said, my name is Han Solo. You know, he would come up with that himself rather than having somebody else, oh, so you're all alone, so let's call you Han Solo. They just felt that was so contrived. So, and I guess I could see, you know, if he would have, you know, hesitated for a minute and said, Han Solo, or something like that. But I didn't think it was that egregious or that bad of a...
That's interesting. I don't know that I had any problem with it at all. But they don't like that it was kind of drawn out, or they don't like that someone else gave it to him, or it's just like too jokey.
Yeah.
They didn't like the actor that gave him the, I want to talk to somebody, and just whatever they say, I'll say, oh, I guess I can see that. It didn't bother me.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was like. I was like, oh, well, I can see how you feel that way. But, you know, going back to how Han met Chewie, I mean, it wasn't Anakin Skywalker, meet Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, kind of thing from the prequels. It was 10 times better. I guess I can see how that could rub somebody the wrong way if they just thought it was... You know, a lot of people were saying, oh, they're just checking off all the boxes. Oh, Kessel Run, check. Han Solo, check. Chewie, check. But I don't know. I thought they did a good job. I don't know how else you could have done that better.
Well, they could have checked fewer boxes. But at the same time, they could have checked more, too, and left no more stories to be told. I felt like there was kind of a happy medium. I can't say it enough. The movie was fun, and it didn't have the weight of the world on its shoulders. And so I think I'm a little more forgiving about that. No, I don't think it's the best Star Wars movie ever made.
No.
But I had a good time. Let me just say it again. I felt like they dedicated some time to developing these characters as characters. And yeah, I think that's probably my chief criticism of Rogue One, is that there's all these disparate characters, but we never really get to know any of them. We don't grow to love those characters. And I felt like they solved that problem in this movie. And the few that survive, I would like to see again. But, gosh, sorry, I am going to rain on the parade, though. There was a character that I absolutely could not stand. Oh, my gosh, the second time I saw it, I hated her more.
Yeah, I know who you're going to say.
You know who I'm going to say? It was Lando's droid. Dude, I don't know that I've ever hated a character in a Star Wars movie that much. And when I complained to my cousin, he was just like, oh, well, what about Jar Jar? Oh, what about so-and-so? And I said, okay... The only character I think I hated that much in any Star Wars movie was there was a CG alien in episode 2 who had like radio dials on his chest. And as he was talking, he turned the radio dial and it messed up his voice.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember in 2002 thinking, gosh, that sucks. And I still think that sucks. He was like, I am mention of the blinking glass. I hated Lando's sidekick robot more than I hated that CG guy in a bad prequel. And sorry about that if that puts a sour note on this thing. But I didn't want to just shower it with praise and not say... When you were saying that people didn't like the way they gave Solo his name, or, you know, that it was checking off boxes, I have to get that off my chest. I didn't mention it in my other podcasts. But oh my gosh, I hated her. And you knew that was coming? That I was going
to
say that?
No, just when you started to say there was one character that I didn't like, I assumed that was probably that character. I didn't hate her that much, but the second time I watched it, I was like, oh yeah, she wants equal rights. And I mean, that's fine, that's her quirk or whatever, you know, but I just thought she was too much like K2SO. You know, she was sassy, and she was, you know, talking back to Lando and whatever. But I thought, oh, we've already seen that. We saw that in Rogue One, you know.
I liked K2SO. I found him
I do too.
Affable. Yeah. And then, of course, he died in a heroic way, and I felt sad. Yeah. Whereas with this character, I hated her so much that I don't want them to do a Lando spinoff that has her in it. Although it seems like it would be natural if you're doing a Lando movie to have how the two of those met, and you need somebody for him to play off of. You don't want him just to be Lando.
Yeah.
And there was the scene in The Falcon where Kira sits down and they both sort of talk. She's saying, you know, oh, obviously Lando loves me and it could never work out. And you see this look on Emilia Clarke's face and she's like, but how would that work? And I kind of find that scene delightful, but it's because of Daenerys Targaryen, Mother of Dragons. It's not because of this, the CG bucket of tood that this character was. I can't get over how much I hated that character. Because usually, like even Jar Jar, people go on and on about Jar Jar. There were moments when I found Jar Jar funny. There were moments where I liked Jar Jar. I guess I'll be struck down for saying that.
Yeah, like that Piusa scene.
Well, yeah, now that it's out there, I'm sorry if there were people that found that character amusing, because we were supposed to.
Right.
Like the way that she walked with like her swaggering hips and all that stuff. I know that was supposed to be endearing or amusing. But for me, it's just like, oh, guys, why did you do this?
No, I can see that for sure. I do like how they incorporated her into the Millennium Falcon after she was destroyed or whatever. That was kind of neat. It makes the Millennium Falcon a little bit more different and unique than any other freighter that's out there. But I don't know if that was ever referenced anywhere that there were droids that were integrated into the ship before.
Oh, I imagine it's not been referenced before. I mean, 3PO does say, I don't know where your ship learned to communicate, but it does have the most peculiar dialect.
Oh, huh.
And yeah, there is that. When 3PO's talking to the computer, you do hear that voice that you hear when they plug the droid into the Falcon.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, that's kind of neat.
They pay attention to that kind of stuff. I appreciate that, you know. I didn't catch that until you mentioned it, but I did like the scene in the control room at Kessel when all the other robots were liberated and taken over and trashing the place. I thought that was pretty fun. Not necessarily her cheering, but all the other droids and stuff.
Maybe I have issues that I need to take care of, but yeah, I reacted so negatively to that. And I remember in 99 hearing people that just hated Jake Lloyd. They hated the boy. They hated young Anakin. And I never did. And so maybe we can just agree to disagree in the same way.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, yeah, but I liked that he was started out innocent. And boy, I'm defending the prequels now. Sorry. Renee would be proud of me.
Yeah, you're defending Jar Jar. Well.
Yeah, you and I had talked about doing an episode in May before we got to talking about the Solo, A Star Wars Story. And both of us wrote a little piece that we were going to do there. And
yeah.
And so maybe we'll do that in the next episode or the episode after that. And I mean, there's still more to talk about with Han Solo, with the character. And
oh, there's time. I mean, we haven't talked about the Rio character or the, was it Mel character? We haven't talked about the music or anything like that. So yeah, we have lots more to talk about. So,
and you know, when the next time we get together, we will have a better idea of how likely there will be four follow-ups to this movie. If this is as disastrous as people were proclaiming it over the weekend, things can always change, and word of mouth could definitely help this film. There are people that have, you know, called it a flop or called it a failure already.
Yeah.
And at the time of this recording, you know, it's just days into the release, so.
Well, and that's another reason I thought when I went today, I'm like, well, I should go again and again just to make up for everybody that's not going or whatever.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about that in a future episode too. I don't know that you and I have ever sat down and discussed the people that hate The Last Jedi, but they're out there.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And maybe we could discuss the people that just hate Solo or hate this.
The new regime?
There you go, great, that's perfect. The current regime that is making these Star Wars films. And I don't know if it's a ton of people or if it's just a very few that will not shut up about it.
Yeah.
Because they've got megaphones held up to their face and they're shouting and there's feedback and it's rough. So maybe that's something we can talk about in the future as well.
Yeah, and how much that affected Solo. But I'm glad that we both agree. One of our texts, you know, I said, yeah, I'm interested to hear your take on the movie. And you said, well, it's kind of just all sadness right now. And I thought, oh no, Rish didn't like the movie. How are we going to talk about this? I loved it, kind of thing. But then you had said that it was more the poor box office than the movie itself, so.
Yeah, just walking out of it, as I wanted to see more, and I wanted them to do more movies like this. There are a bunch of characters that we could see spin-offs about, including the ice cream guy from Empire Strikes Back. But I thought, you know, if this movie does not succeed, we're never going to see a Princess Leia origin film, you know, young Princess Leia film kind of thing. And there's so many more besides that one, but it's just like, I really would like to see them do that. I saw an interview with the girl that plays Eleven on Stranger Things.
Oh, sure.
And she said, I would like to play the young Leia in a Star Wars movie. And I just thought, oh, I would have no problem with that casting at all.
No, I thought she'd be great for that. She'd have to get buns, but other than that, she... And do you know her name?
I don't. It's a three-name thing.
Yeah, Millie Bobby Brown.
Oh, well done.
And Han Solo is played by who?
Oh, shoot. Eleanor Ehrenreich.
Pretty close. The last part there.
Sorry. Well, thank you.
Eric Alberdine.
Eric Alberdine. Ozzy Kabukian. sorry. I just get a little wronger each time, don't I? Thank you, Marshall, for wasting 2 hours of your day with me.
Yeah.
And I assure you that when we get this sucker edited, it will only be an hour and 50 minutes of the listener's time wasted.
We'll add some more audio from the previous podcast to fill the time.
Again, we like to hear that there are people that listen.
Definitely.
And that they have opinions. And if they have differing opinions, I'm curious about that stuff. I'm an empathetic kind of person, and I want to know why somebody hated something or why somebody loved something. Plus, it gives us fodder for conversation.
Yeah, if somebody didn't like this movie, yeah, we wouldn't be mad at you if you told us he didn't like it and he told us why. We'd probably, like Rish said, we'd have more to talk about and answer your or respond to your comments and things like that. So if you'd like to interact with us here at the Delusions of Grandeur, you can email journeyintopodcast@gmail.com. You can go to the forums at journeyinto.freeforums.org. You can call the voicemail line at 77JINTO107. Or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Give us your questions there. We'd love to hear from anybody about any of our episodes. Just to let us know you're out there and encourage us to keep on keeping on. But let us know.
You've said it all. One more time, who played Han Solo?
Alden Ehrenreich.
I think you won this episode.
You win!
Well, it's not that kind of podcast, Rish. It's just, you know, you have to see how long you can last.
You're dealing with the wrong person then. Because, wow, I can go on and on. Thank you again, Marshall. Thank you, listeners, again.
Yeah.
Thank you for the many, many, many people who have donated to Marshall's... Oh, sorry, I couldn't sell that.
Yes, if you would like to donate, you can do that as well. But anyway, thanks for listening, and look forward to talking more about Solo and all the other Star Wars stuff. For now, this is Marshall Latham signing out.
Yes, and this has been Ozzy Kabukian. Good night.
Good night.
Greetings. This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the Federation Starship Enterprise. The Star Trek Delusions of Grandeur podcast is produced under a Creative Commons license, which...
3.0 license, sir.
What's that, Ensign Crusher?
It's Creative Commons 3.0 licensed.
Yes, thank you. 3.0 license, meaning you can share the file
non-commercial, with... Captain.
Right. A Creative Commons non-commercial license. You may listen, download, and share the episode.
No derivatives, sir?
Uh-huh. No derivatives as well. The episodes are free, but you may not charge for them, alter them, or take credit for them. You may also donate to the show to keep it going, and to pay to get Marshall Latham's children's Borg implants removed. We thank you for boldly going where too many podcasts have gone before. Make it so.
Sir, turns out it's a Star Wars podcast, not a Star Trek one.
Shut up, Wesley.
Of course, that was from the Brian Delaney book, Han Solo at Star's End.
Here, say that again, but say Brian Daly this time.
Oh, Brian Daly? Okay. See, I can get Alden Ehrenreich, but I can't get...
Ding!
Brian Daly. Okay, now what's the name of the lobster guy that was sitting next to Lando at the Sobek table?
Does he have a name?
He does.
Wait, what do you mean?
His name is... Something like Sturm Scissor Punch. Something really stupid. Before the movie, they showed, I guess, that scene from the Sobek table, and you could kind of go around and look at all the characters, and it would tell you who they were. And that was one of the ones that people were making fun of before the movie came out, was Sturm Scissor Punch.
Huh. Wait, hey, who was the guy that Anthony Daniels played?
I think he was the weird-looking Wookiee.
Oh, gosh, that guy looked so weird. Like he was half Wookiee, and one of the apes from Planet of the Apes was his mother.
Yeah, I heard somebody compare him to Chaka.
Oh, never mind. Yes.
Land of the Lost.
There you go. The Chaka one. Interesting. Well, I like that thing a little bit better, knowing that he was Tony Daniels. But every time they showed him, I was just like, no, don't show that one anymore. Show one of the ones you actually made a Wookiee suit for.
Yeah, I don't know what the story was there. Why they decided to go with a different looking Wookiee. But maybe just to make him stand out from... I'm sure there's a backstory there, too, that somebody will explore in a novel or something.
I hope it's not me that has to do that.